I told Will, I hope that's not contagious. That's how it can happen too, you know. It's just somebody gets off and everybody else gets off, and that's how it goes. So buckle up. I'll just share a quick story about Howard Porter. You know, I growing up, of course, Joanne, I think, was probably, well, Edna was my first experience with the Porter family, and then probably Ben. And we delivered the Tulsa World to Ben, and it was always interesting because when we would go to collect, it was usually in the evening time. But if you went to Ben's apartment over here in between 6:30 and 7, kids, there was a time at 6:30 at night, the Wheel of Fortune was not on everybody's TV. Ben was always watching from 6:30 to 7, the Rush Limbaugh show. And so if you went to collect money during that time, you had to wait until a commercial. He would let you in the house, but that's as far as you got until the commercial came on. And then, of course, I can't say enough of what Ardell has done and meant to me and my family. But when I got to meet Howard, I didn't really even know Howard existed until probably summer of 2016. And he came to visit and really enjoyed Howard. Howard coached basketball, and so I really liked visiting with Howard. A few days before Faye passed away, Dad and I were over at Ardell and Faye's house. And Scott Hart, it was towards the end of the year when we were there, so football playoff implications were going on. And Scott had on, I know the Seahawks were playing, I don't have a clue who they were playing against, but he was watching this football game. And he got up to go get a drink. Howard walks in and turns on whatever was on ESPN, one of the holiday basketball tournaments. And so we started watching basketball. Howard got up and left. Scott came back in, grabbed the remote, turned it back to football. This happened a few more times. And I just sat there, just, you know, hey, whatever, you know, it's not my TV. When Grace passed away, I was talking to Howard about that. And he said, I thought this whole time that you were the one switching it back to football. And I was just glad that he had thought about it some too, because it was really something to watch. Now, there's a pretty good joke of a lawyer going and representing a railroad company in a lawsuit that had been filed by a pretty old rancher. In this case, the rancher's prize bull was missing from a section that the railroad ran through, and the rancher only wanted to be paid the fair value of his bull. And so the case was scheduled to go to trial before the justice of the peace in the back room of a general store. And there, the attorney for the railroad company immediately courted the rancher, and he tried to get him to settle out of court. And he did his very best-selling job. And finally, the rancher decided that he would take half of what the bull was worth. And as the rancher signed his release, he took the check and he cashed it in the store. But there, the lawyer, he couldn't quit while he was ahead. He went over and he let him know just what a dumb country bumpkin he was. He said, I really put one over on you there. I couldn't have won that case. The engineer was asleep. The fireman was in the caboose when the train went through your ranch on that morning. I didn't have one witness that I could have put on the stand. I really fooled you. And the old rancher replied, he said, well, I'll tell you, I was a little worried myself about winning this case, because I'll be if that bull didn't show up this morning. Well, pretty good day for the rancher. A minister was getting a red carpet tour of another minister's church when, and with a lot of pride, that minister pointed to the rich imported pews and the luxurious decorations. And as they stepped outside, darkness began falling, and a spotlight shone on a huge cross atop the steeple. And there the minister smiled and said, that cross alone cost us $10,000. And the man said, you got cheated. There were times when Christians could get a cross for free. Well, what did he mean by there was a time Christians could get crosses for free? Well, of course, we know that over the years that thousands of Christians, probably tens of thousands of Christians, have died for their faith. They died on crosses. They died in arenas. They died in lonely prison cells. Christians throughout the ages have suffered terribly for their faith. Several years ago, there was a group of missionaries who started a college in Honduras, and they were attacked and robbed of all of their computers and equipment of the college. But they also were robbed of their personal possessions, and then they all had to return home for some pretty intense counseling. And one person who heard about the tragedy asked that very harsh question, "Where was God?" You could have asked that same question at Smyrna. Smyrna was not a friendly place to be a Christian. In Revelation chapter 2, verse 9, Jesus says, "I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich, and the slander of those who say they are Jews, but are not, but are a synagogue of Satan." And then in the next verse, Jesus essentially tells them that really this is only the beginning. He says, "Don't fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And for 10 days you will have tribulation. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life." What does all that mean? It means that Smyrna's church had already endured persecution and slander, but they were also about to face prison and much more intense persecution, even to the point of death. History would tell us that a man named Polycarp was one of the best known preachers in Smyrna, and he would be executed for his faith by Rome for his faith. So like I said, Smyrna was not a friendly place to be a Christian. In fact, of all of Asia Minor, Smyrna may have been the absolute worst place to be a Christian. A Roman statesman by the name of Marcus Cicero, this is what he called Smyrna. He said that it was one of Rome's most faithful and ancient allies. And Smyrna then would go on to prove its loyalty to Rome by erecting several temples in honor of the Roman gods. There was even an altar that was honoring Caesar, where once a year every citizen was expected to burn incense and declare that Caesar is Lord. And after the incense was given to the offer, was then issued a certificate. Anyone that was refusing to acknowledge Caesar as Lord would eventually be excluded from the guilds. And that would certainly mean unemployment and poverty. And then also it would have been a heresy for a Christian. But initially, at the time, the church was exempted from this requirement. And this is one historian's notes. He said that normally the Roman Empire required all of the subjugated peoples within the empire to venerate the Roman gods, including to offer sacrifices to the image of the emperor. Each conquered people group would be allowed to continue the worship of their traditional deities as long as they paid homage to the gods of Rome, thus demonstrating their loyalty as good citizens who sought the political well-being of the empire. But for monotheistic Jews, Rome made an exception. As long as they prayed for Caesar, they would not violate the first commandment by committing idolatry. So in the early years, when Christianity was really just viewed as a different sect of Judaism, Christians were also given this exception. But as time progressed and the Jewish leaders became more intent on persecuting Christians, the Jews began to argue that Christians were not really Jews at all. In fact, they accused Christians of being subversive. And these Christians, for them, they believed that Jesus was the Lord and not Caesar. Acts 17:7 tells us that the early Christians were all acting against the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, Jesus. To the Jews and to the Romans, they were a dangerous element in society, and they needed to be eliminated for the good of the empire. And apparently, as I said, the Jews in Smyrna had successfully convinced leaders in town that Christianity was a dangerous religion, that it threatened the good of the community and of Rome. And so the church would have lost their exemption, and they would have suffered financially because of that. And so that phrase there, "I know the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan." And so the church of Smyrna was a struggling congregation. And if you've been, if you had been a Christian there, you would have constantly faced insults and mistreatment. You would have struggled to make a living. No doubt your children would have been targets constantly in fights. You would have lived in danger of losing what little possessions you had, and you would have eventually faced the prospects of imprisonment and death. In those circumstances, you might have been tempted to ask some serious questions. Where is God? Why am I suffering like this? Maybe even, what am I doing wrong? You know, Facebook, for all the bad that it is, it has a really neat feature, at least I think, that's called On This Day. And it reminds you of everything that you've posted on that particular day for every year that you've been part of Facebook. It may be a really sad commentary now that I say that out loud. But last year's post, they haven't been a whole lot of fun to read. They have served as reminders of how much pain that Dad was in, just how sick he had become, and really how helpless that all of us were during that time. And it's a terrible thing to be in that situation. And I say all that, that's what was forefront on my mind, but you can put any kind of situation. Think of your children when they had chicken pox. You have that feeling of helplessness. You can't heal them. You can't stop pain. And at one point, you have to start praying for rest. And a time for Dad, it became only fitful sleep. And there's that sense of helplessness. And it's hard, really, to explain that. When your kids are sick, when your parents are sick, you want to help them. But a lot of times, there really isn't anything you can do. And a lot of times people ask that question, why was this happening? Well, how can you explain really what's really happening? Certainly in some ways last year, I began struggling with the question of where was God? But really the answer isn't that hard to come by. When you think of an ailing parent, or you think of that child with chickenpox, what you have there is sort of maybe a little bit what God feels when we suffer persecution. When we are mistreated for our faith, when you have to watch someone that you love so much that you would do anything for suffer. This is how we must look to God when we suffer from the mistreatment of others. And let's be clear on one thing. The Bible explicitly tells us that we will suffer in this world. Peter wrote to the Christians of his day in 1 Peter 4:12 to not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. And then the verse we read just a few weeks ago, 1 Peter 5, beginning in verse 8, where he tells us to be sober-minded, to be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood all throughout the world. And Jesus tells us in John 16:33 that in this world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. In fact, just a little bit before that, in John 15:20, Jesus says that, remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours. We will suffer in this world, and I'm speaking as Christians. We are very blessed to live in this country where we don't necessarily suffer as others in the brotherhood do. But the Bible tells us Christians will be persecuted. Christians will face hardship and loss. Christians will die. We will suffer in this world. And so why? Why do we suffer? You know, I think when first asked, we asked that question, why is Dad? Dad's in terrible pain. Why was he in so much pain? We were looking for medical answers. But really, the answer is things hurt because we live in a world that's tainted by sin. Our bodies weren't created to be victims of disease and illnesses that maim us and eventually destroy us. And the reason that the Christian suffers is because we live in an ugly, sinful world. A world that is so filled with hate and selfishness that it's hard to understand. And it's difficult to explain. And that's the only explanation for something like Columbine, or the World Trade Centers, or the Pentagon, or the high school in Parkland, Florida. A selfish, sinful world is the only explanation of why Christians, who only mean to help, would suffer persecution, deprivation, and death. That's the answer to the question why. But frankly, that's not the answer we want, is it? We don't care about medical reasons. I don't think Dad cared about sin and evil in Washington Regional. I think we could have spoken all night to give him valid scientific answers to the question, and none of that would have mattered at all. Those answers was not what he wanted. And I don't know what he wanted to hear. But I can put myself in that position, and I would want to hear that my pain wouldn't last forever. I would want to hear that it was going to be all right, that those are the words of comfort that I believe would matter most to me. And I think that those were the only words of comfort that would matter to the believers at Smyrna. That's why Jesus told them, your pain isn't going to last forever. Don't fear what you're about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested, and for 10 days you will face tribulation. They needed to hear that. They needed to hear it's going to be all right. And that's why Jesus tells them to be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. But even those words of comfort were not as important as something else that they needed. Again, during that time with Dad, he really didn't want an explanation. We couldn't make it all go away. But I think what he really wanted was to have us near him. And that's the same with a small child as well. They just want you to be in the room near them. You don't have to know everything, but just tell them that you understand, what they're going through. And so I know in my position that I would want my family to be there right with me. And that is also what the Christians at Smyrna needed. They needed to know that God had not forsaken them, that God had not forgotten them, that their cries for help were being heard. And so Jesus tells them what they needed to hear. He tells them, I haven't left you. He tells them, I know what you're going through. And then in verse 9, he tells them, I know of your tribulation and your poverty, and I know the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not. And then in verse 10, he goes on to tell them, he knows what they're facing, that it's prison and even death, but he hasn't forsaken them. He hasn't left them. He is there carrying them through this time of turmoil and trial. And maybe the best illustration of that is that old poem, Footprints in the Sand, that goes like this, and I'm going to go ahead and read it, and I know everybody knows it. That one night I had a dream. I was walking along the beach with my Lord, and across the dark sky flashed scenes from my life. For each scene, I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to me and one to my Lord. When the last scene of my life shot before me, I looked back at the footprints in the sand. There was only one set of footprints. I realized that this was the lowest and saddest times of my life. This bothered me, and I questioned the Lord about my dilemma. Lord, you told me when I decided to follow you that you would walk and talk with me all the way. But I'm aware that during the most troublesome times of my life, there were only one set of footprints. I just don't understand why. Why, when I needed you the most, you would leave me? And he whispered, my precious child, I love you, and I will never leave you. Never ever during your trials and testings, when you only saw one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. Well, they didn't have that in Smyrna, but I know they understood that concept. That was the knowledge that allowed those Christians in Smyrna to remain faithful in a very difficult situation. I'll close with this. We started this talking a little bit about Polycarp there. Most famous preacher in Smyrna. His name was Polycarp, and he was a close friend, and he was a disciple of the Apostle John. And at age 86, he was arrested, and the Roman proconsul there asked him to recant his faith. And the proconsul said to him that, I have respect for your age, simply say away with the atheist. And when he said away with the atheist, he's talking about the Christians that did not recognize the deity of Caesar. And so the proconsul says, say away with these atheists, and I will set you free. And Polycarp pointed toward the pagan side of the crowd, and he recited, away with the atheists. And then when asked why he was so obstinate in the face of potential death, these are the words recorded by Polycarp. He said, 86 years I have served him, and never did he do me any wrong. How can I blaspheme my king who saved me? And Polycarp was led away and was burned to death for his faith. But Polycarp knew that throughout all of his trials, Jesus had never left or forsaken him. And because of that, he was able to stand in the face of torture and death, because he knew that Jesus' promise would be true, that he who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. He was willing to face physical death because he was certain of eternal life. This morning, if you are not a Christian, as every Sunday morning, we urge you to make that decision to come as together we stand and we sing.